Welcome to Better Sex, where you get the information and inspiration to create and enjoy your best possible sex life. Join your host, sex therapist Jessa Zimmerman, as she brings you expert guests, helpful tips, knowledge, and strategies to improve your intimate relationships. And now, your host, Jessa Zimmerman.
Hey, everybody, it's Jessa. Welcome back to the Better Sex Podcast. I'm so glad you're here. And today's topic, well, we're going to be talking about anorgasmia in women, struggling, you know, people that struggle to reach orgasm, whether that's been their whole life or it's situational or whatever. And it kind of ties in nicely with the focus of my webinar. You know, I'm focusing on what I call, or what is called, lower desire partners, people who are struggling to have any interest in sex in a committed relationship. And my webinar is really talking about the kinds of things that are happening and the really common mistakes people make that really block desire, and really trying to understand it differently to realize, wait, you've got really legitimate obstacles, and there's things you can do to increase your desire, and there are absolutely things you can do with your partner to make this easier for you and not just have it be something you feel bad about. And struggling to reach an orgasm would be one of those legitimate obstacles, right? So it is, Dr. Rachel Needle, my guest, says 5 to 10% of women, biological women, have lifelong anorgasmia, meaning they have always struggled, you know, and maybe have never had an orgasm. And that's going to be a barrier. Not like orgasm is the payoff for sex. I'm always saying it isn't, but it's nice to be able to have one. And if you're struggling to know what you want, if you're struggling to find pleasure, if you're feeling bad about how your own functioning goes, you know, all of that would dovetail with low desire. So anyway, it's a wonderful intersection. If you're interested in the webinar, you can go to intimacywithease.com/masterclass. And you can watch that. It's about an hour long. Really try to pack it full of information for anybody who's struggling with desire. And then stick around for today's talk with Dr. Rachel Needle about anorgasmia, all the various ways it manifests, what to be doing about that, how to think about this, what to do, whether it's been lifelong or whether something has changed. Anyway, packed full of information. I think you're going to get a lot out of it. And before we start the show today, it is sponsored by Intimacy with Ease. It's a method to help otherwise happy couples achieve a sex life that is easy and fun for both of them, so that you can actually just enjoy your sex life with zero stress. For more information, if you want to watch a brief little training video that's available, all of that, go to intimacywithease.com. So Rachel, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, this topic, I got a request to do an episode on this topic. I hate to say it, it was probably 2 years ago. And it's been hard to find, I don't know, I haven't come across someone who wanted to come on and talk about it. So I'm really grateful that you're doing this.
Of course, I'm a big fan of orgasms and talking about them.
Okay, I was going to say, big fan of anorgasmia. No.
No, not of anorgasmia.
So tell me, or tell the listeners, what is anorgasmia? And yeah, well, let me start with that.
Okay, sure. So, you know, it's a sexual dysfunction, and it's characterized by persistent or recurrent delay in or absence of orgasm. And I know specifically today we're going to talk about females. And so it's very prevalent in females. And so when we talk about lifelong, right, because there's different types, which means they've never had an orgasm. So their whole life they've had trouble with orgasm or delayed orgasm. We're talking about 5 to 10% of biological females report this.
Wow. I had no idea it was that high. And that's lifelong.
Lifelong.
Versus acquired?
More secondary, right. So people that have either had orgasm or not had difficulty achieving orgasm at some point in their life, or like so acquired or even situational, which means that they can have an orgasm, experience orgasm when they're with themselves, but not with a partner, or even vice versa. So, or even with one partner and not a different partner. So that's situational, where it's based on the situation, whether or not they have difficulty.
Okay. And I would imagine, I mean, we'll sort of get into this, but it seems like you would address those in two different ways. Is that?
Absolutely. I address it in more than two ways, actually. So when I think about, you know, people are like, well, how do you treat that? And what do you do about it? So for me, I really think of it as there's not a cookbook model, right? This isn't just, you know, do X, Y, and Z and voila, you're going to have an orgasm.
Right.
It really depends on what are the factors that are contributing to the difficulty.
Okay.
And so for me, I really have to understand more about their history, when it's come on, you know, other sexual functioning, how that works, their relationship or relationships, and so many other factors to understand how they got to the point where they were struggling.
Yeah.
And that's what I base how I would help somebody on.
Okay. So before we get to sort of the treatment options, let's talk a little bit about what goes into somebody. Let's say it's lifelong anorgasmia. Well, no, let me go back for a second. You said delayed. What qualifies as a delay here?
Because it's easier of a question when it comes to biological males, right? But when it comes to female, it's based on sufficient stimulation, right? So, you know, that they're able to experience an orgasm, right? This heightened sense of arousal with contractions, you know, in an amount of time that's based on sufficient stimulation. So for biological females who have been stimulated for, you know, I guess an average of, you know, 15 minutes, it just depends, because we also have to think about the fact that only 25% of women will consistently reach orgasm during vaginal intercourse. So they won't consistently reach orgasm through penile vaginal penetration,
right?
And need more. So if, you know, even if it's 20 minutes and, you know, that's all that's happening, there's a good chance that they're not going to have it.
Right. 20 minutes of thrusting is not going to do anything for most women, right? Yeah.
Right. You have to know, I always say, you know, you have to know what gets you there yourself, you know? So one of the things that I often first recommend is, you know, that people even just look at their genitals, right? Spend some time like exploring, getting comfortable. You'd be surprised at how many women are not comfortable with their genitals.
Well, so no, I wouldn't be surprised, but yes, people may be surprised. Yeah.
I guess people, not you. Yeah, sorry. Right, yes, right. Of course you're not. But, you know, most people are surprised at that. And, you know, we know how many people are uncomfortable with their bodies in general. So when it comes to their vulva area, they just, you know, a lot of people think it should look a certain way, it should smell a certain way, it should feel a certain way. And, you know, that's rarely the case. They come, you know, vulvas come in all different shapes, colors, sizes, and all look so different. So the first thing I have people do is, you know, start exploring their own bodies, start becoming comfortable with their own bodies, and even look at pictures of different vulvas, you know, see what else exists. Because again, we're taught that, you know, it should be this red, pretty blossoming flower. And this is how it should look.
Yeah, right, right.
And people are, you know, even going through certain surgeries to make their vulvas look like that.
Right.
And, you know, whatever is most comfortable for you. But I think it's really important to explore your own body, become comfortable with what it is you have, see what else exists. And that's a really good place to start.
Right. All right. So if you're getting, though, sufficient stimulation, like stimulation of the type and where you need it, is there some sort of definition about what's delayed and what isn't? Because, you know, women often need more stimulation than men do.
Yeah.
And I've had women somebody just last week said, oh, it takes so long, 5 or 10 minutes, as if that's an eternity.
No, that's totally normal.
Right. Right. That's what I said. But like, where's the line? Is it subjective? It takes too long for me, or is it?
Yeah. I mean, again, like it depends on the stimulation, you know, adequate stimulation and what that looks like for you. You know, I don't know the exact statistic. I think it's somewhere between 7 and 15 minutes, but I hate to kind of throw that out there because I really also want people to try to understand what works for them. So if you have, you know, your mother in the room next to you and your, you know, 5-year-old in the room on the other side, you know, you don't feel comfortable. It's like, no matter what you do, that might be on your mind. If, you know, something big is going on in your life and you're not able to stay present and stay focused, that's not going to work either. You know, so there are so many factors that contribute to this, that can contribute to having difficulty, that you really have to understand what those are and work on that.
All right. So here's a question I have gotten. I'll ask people if they're orgasmic, you know, in the course of couple sex therapy, and someone will say, I don't know if I've ever had an orgasm. Like, some people are really clear they haven't. So certainly plenty of people are clear they have, but there are people that say, I don't know. Yeah. And of course, we all only know our own, right? Like, how do you describe what an orgasm feels like to help a woman understand? You know, because sometimes people think, oh, but the fireworks were supposed to go off and I was supposed to be screaming or squirting, or, you know, they have some idea of what it would mean to have an orgasm, and theirs is different.
So most people will experience the sort of involuntary muscle contraction, right? And a lot of that is like of the whole body almost, you know, at times. So they'll experience increased blood pressure, increased heart rate, breathing, but that can all happen during arousal too. So it's specifically sort of these involuntary muscular contractions. And there are different factors that could make those not as pronounced in some people, right? Depending on the strength of your pelvic floor muscles and depending on sort of, you know, again, some people have full body, you know, contractions and responses, but not everybody does. So what I tell people is mostly to focus on, because I really do feel like when we focus on this sort of goal of, I need to have this big orgasm. And like
right,
you said,
right,
it's gonna be fireworks and it's going to be
angels sing, right?
Yeah. Then, you know, A, you completely miss the boat. I always tell people that, because then you're not just in the moment experiencing all the sensations and how good it feels. And while I'm a big fan of orgasm, it's not necessarily the main event. It doesn't have to happen that way, right? As long as you're, you know, experiencing arousal and pleasure, that should be really your goal. And enjoying it. So, you know, I tell people to kind of just focus on what feels good, and then you're more likely to experience this heightened sense of arousal anyway.
Yeah. So a sense of, if they feel those contractions, that would be pretty definitive. And then I guess the other thing I suggest to people is, do you feel left hanging, or does it feel like some sense of completion? Because for some people, it's just not, it doesn't feel as big as they think it should feel, but it's happening. You know, they realize once we talk about it, I guess I am having orgasm. It just didn't look like this Hollywood version I had in my head.
Which is also another problem, right? Because, you know, I may have an orgasm right now and it might be, like you said, like fireworks, or I just feel a sense of completion and I'm just done, right? That's all I have.
Yeah.
You know, I can feel it, I'm done. And then there are times where it's not as pronounced, but it's happening, mm-hmm, and it may still be done, right? But you're right. Like, wait, was there supposed to be more? Because yesterday it was so much stronger. And you just have to be open to the fact that that's going to happen.
Right, a lot of variety. Yeah.
Other times, sometimes it's going to feel better than other times. And, you know, don't get stuck in your head in terms of, what does that mean? Oh no, am I no longer going to have what I had yesterday? Right.
Right,
this is
right.
Normal. Just like our desire waxes and wanes, our orgasm can change over time and different based on stimulation, based on other things going on in our life, just based on our bodies.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So what are the kinds of things that set women up to struggle with orgasm?
So I would say, you know, I mentioned the first, not being comfortable with their bodies and feeling, mm-hmm, insecure in general, right? We talk about their vulva regions, but also what we call, you know, a spectatoring, right? It's kind of like looking in on yourself while you're engaged in sexual activity. And so you're worried about, oh my God, how do I look in this position? You know, they're looking at my role, or they, you know, or even, did I turn the oven off, or someone hearing me? Like, anything that takes you out of the moment and not has you not being mindful can get in the way of enjoying sexual activity.
Right. Right. What else could get in the way?
So you want to stay in the moment. You want to stay, you know, stay focused. You want to think sexy thoughts so that you're not, again, all over the place, focus on other things, you know. And some people aren't as attracted to their partners at times. And sometimes they do, or sometimes they are, but they choose to fantasize and then they judge themselves on it. So again, staying in the moment, making sure that you're not engaging in any of those things is important. Not getting the type of stimulation that you want can sometimes impact your ability to experience arousal. So communicate with, you know, your partner or partners and let them know what feels good, how you want them to do things differently. Give people, your partner or partners, a little direction. That can be really helpful.
That's if you know, though, too, right? Because then there's so many women that maybe have no sense if they haven't masturbated, or they haven't had a lot of experience, or they just never thought about themselves. Like, sometimes they don't even know, right? What would feel good?
Absolutely. And so that's why, I mean, I always recommend people kind of experiment with themselves, right? That's how we can most best find out. But again, that might change when you're with a partner. So, you know, and a lot of times, like, you want that communication, you want that connection, you want to be able to tell somebody like a little bit longer there, like maybe you just need it to be the same for a little while so that that continues to build up. And a lot of partners will want to kind of change positions and change.
Right. Keep it moving. Yeah.
That feels really good. Don't stop doing that. Literally don't stop doing that. So that can be helpful. Our partners are not mind readers, so that's really important. And going back to, you know, we're talking about orgasm, but honestly, stay out of the results. Stop spending time and energy focusing on whether or not you're going to have an orgasm and sort of only thinking about that, because then you miss all the sensations that can get you there. And if you're in your head thinking about, am I going to orgasm? Am I going to orgasm?
Right. You're not going to get there.
Literally less likely to have an orgasm. And feel free to change it up. You know, a lot of people will kind of stick to the same types of positions, and sometimes they work, sometimes they don't work. Try different things out. For females, we often need some kind of clitoral stimulation. So figure out positions that are more likely to stimulate your clitoris, or do it yourself, or ask your partner or partners to do it. You know, there's nothing wrong with that.
Right, right. Or do it out, be separate from intercourse, right? Just take a different kind of turn. Yeah.
Outer course. Like, you know, you don't have to, you know, again, we're talking about heterosexual relationships mostly. So, you know, but there doesn't have to be any sort of penetration.
Hey, we're taking a real quick break here in the middle of the podcast, and I want to share with you a free resource. If you are in a relationship where sexual desire has been an issue, where one of you wants more sex than the other, where one of you or both of you are struggling to feel desire for sex, this is the training for you. It's a free webinar that you can watch on demand. It's called How to Want Sex More, or Help Your Partner To, without feeling pressure or obligation. In it, I cover the five biggest mistakes that keep people stuck, blocked from their sexual desire, and it's going to give you ways to approach this differently to start to create a sex life that's really fun and easy for both people. You can sign up at intimacywithease.com/masterclass. Okay, what else can get in the way of somebody's ability to orgasm? You know, lifelong, when we're talking they've never had one.
Yeah. So for some people, it could be that they learned that it wasn't okay, and that they weren't a sexual being. So not feeling like you're allowed to experience pleasure. And there are messages that we get about sex growing up, whether it's from religious institutions, schools, caregivers, or others, that sometimes teach us that it's not okay to experience this pleasure and that we're not sexual beings. So that can really get in the way. Our messages that we received about sex and about our own sexuality. For some women, they have difficulty really letting go. So if you are one of those people that is feeling uncomfortable, I mean, literally, when you have an orgasm, you sometimes lose control of every part of your body for a period of time. So it's like, you may make a noise, you may make a face, your body may do something that you know it's not used to doing. And there's some people that just want to control that. They don't want to look or sound a certain way. So they really hold that back because it makes them uncomfortable to do those things. And similarly, to be that vulnerable, right? You really have to be vulnerable, or allow yourself to be vulnerable, to let go in that way. So not being comfortable doing so, whether it has to do with your partner or partners or just something within yourself, can really get in the way of that. Yeah. One of the things that I sometimes tell people to do, when I sense that that's part of the case, again, this is not a cookbook model, but you know, I've suggested to clients before that in their car, at a stoplight, they simulate sounds of orgasm. Like when Harry Met Sally scene.
Exactly, I was just going to say,
like,
right.
Yeah. Like I totally tell them, like, I want to hear you, you know, or no, I don't want to hear, but I want you to do that when you're in a car, you know, when no one else can hear you maybe. And then maybe try when you're next to someone, they can't hear you, but you might look like, oh, okay, what is that person doing? You know, I mean, but allowing themselves to just let go when they're alone and feel comfortable in how they sound, and it be okay. Because sometimes I think about it, like when I play tennis, when I grunt, when I hit the ball, I swear I hit better. Like I, you know, it's like, there's definitely something stronger about my swing when I make that noise.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes you just got to start making the noises and getting into it in that way. And it might sound or feel sexy to you. And that might make it more likely that you're, you know, going to experience greater pleasure and maybe have an orgasm.
Yeah. Certainly get out of your own way in that sense, right? Willing to let go. Yeah. What about trauma? How much of the time will past sexual trauma get in the way of orgasm?
Absolutely. And I don't know the statistic on that, but very often, right? Yeah. So depending on the type of trauma, you know, you can experience difficulty in having an orgasm. I'm just always very careful because, again, I think that even there's a lot of therapists, there's a lot of people, but there's even a lot of therapists that will hear that and make a linear correlation.
Right. You were somehow molested. This has got to be your problem.
Oh, yeah. You were, you know, experienced a rape, like, oh, that's why you have pain, or that's why you can't have an orgasm, or, you know, and it's really important that you don't kind of go directly there. Can trauma contribute? Absolutely. Are there times that trauma is the contributing factor? Sure. Is that likely that there's not other contributing factors, whether they came before or after? No, there likely are other factors. So I think that's really important too. And, you know, there are studies that have found like 67% of heterosexual women will reported that they occasionally fake orgasm. So that's not uncommon either, because, you know, there's a lot of reasons we might do that, right? We might get uncomfortable having the conversation, you know, because a lot of partners will be focused on like, did you orgasm? Did you orgasm? Like they take it as like, this is a reflection on me.
Like a medal, right? Or a point of pride. Yeah.
Yeah. Like if I have 4 orgasms, that's all me.
That is not your doing, partner. Okay. Yeah.
You could not have done this without me, at least. Right, okay. So we can at least say that. So it's not maybe all me. Sometimes they want to avoid an uncomfortable conversation, right? Or not hurt their partner's feelings. Again, because many partners will take that personally. And don't get me wrong. Sometimes it is personal. Sometimes you aren't skilled, or you're not doing what it is that will do that for your partner. But then I put it on your partner or partners too, where they're not communicating.
Right.
Sometimes people are insecure about their difficulty in their sexual response, whether it's, you know, arousal, desire, you know, orgasm. So if I'm uncomfortable, I might just fake it because I don't want to even have to go near that. So I always, again, tell people, like, understanding your body, yourself, what you're comfortable with, communicating with your partner or partners, and understand why is it bothering you? Why are we so concerned with having an orgasm, right? Even so much that with the language we use, did you achieve this orgasm? Like, achieve it. Like it's achievement, right?
Right.
And I say, have an orgasm. Did you have an orgasm?
Yeah.
Or experience orgasm. And so, you know, even the language we use kind of sets some women up to fail.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there anything about, I'm just thinking about other reasons people might have had lifelong anorgasmia, anything about medications or even birth control that maybe is in people's way?
So there's definitely, listen, I think of, you know, this whole like pie chart that I've you know, used for presentations, and like all of the factors that can contribute to sexual dysfunction in general, including problems orgasming, biological hormonal factors, past history of disappointing sex, interpersonal issues, intrapersonal issues, contextual issues, past trauma history. And I think it said, you know, with hormonal, biological, medical issues. So all of these things can contribute. And again, sometimes, you know, it's as easy as switching a medication. You know, and that's like, okay, I was orgasmic. Now I'm not, switching a medication. Sometimes it's, you know, switching a medication and communicating with our partner, figuring out what feels good. You know, again, we have to remember that only 25% of women consistently reach orgasm during vaginal penetration. So what are you doing for sexual activity? And is that impacting your likelihood of experiencing this heightened sense of arousal?
Yeah. Yeah. So in terms of sticking with the lifelong anorgasmia for the moment, thinking about the treatment approaches or the kinds of, I mean, you've said a lot about the different kinds of things you're thinking about, but getting to know, getting comfortable with your own body, getting to know your own arousal pattern and what feels good to you, right? Communicating with your partner, maybe dealing with messages we've gotten about sex negativity, maybe switching on medication. Anything else that really goes into how you encourage people to find their orgasm?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's also important to remember what turns someone on is not universal. So what turns me on might not be what turns you on. And what turns me on today might not be what turns me on tomorrow. So we all have our different preferences. Let's talk about them. Let's try things out. Let's not focus. Again, mindfulness is one of the best tools that we can use for this, because again, depending on what the factors are that are leading you to having difficulty, like being able to stay present, pay attention on purpose in that moment, experience all of that arousal and everything that is just being done to your body in that way is something that is going to be very helpful for a lot of people. So, you know, mindfulness is a great tool. And I tell people just to practice this outside of sex, right? Because we have to begin to be able to, you know, our brains, maybe the first time you're going to like practice, and it's going to be 10 seconds. Pretty sure the first time mine might have been 5 seconds before my mind wandered. You know, like it's a muscle, it's going to grow. And over time, you're going to be able to do that for longer and longer. So being able to stay present during sexual activity is really important.
Yeah. All right. So let's switch to talk about either acquired or situational. And again, I don't know if you want to take those separately.
I think they are separate, right? Because someone can have acquired orgasm dysfunction or difficulty, which means that at one point they were able to, and now they're not. And all of the factors that I previously talked about are all the ones that could contribute. And kind of, I think of myself as like a psychologist, but I play detective, you know, because it's like, I have to figure out what are all of the things that are contributed? What are all the factors that are maintaining this in order to help somebody? And then situational, you know, that's something that if I know that if I am able to, you know, easily have an orgasm with one partner and not another, let's figure out what's going on here. Is it the different type of stimulation? Is it their skill level? Is it my comfort with them? Is it, you know, even my feelings towards that person?
Like, right. You know, relationship dynamics or something. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. All right. So, but let's take the case of, because this comes up a lot, right? Women who can orgasm in masturbation and then maybe have never had an orgasm with a partner, at least infrequently. Like it's a really much more difficult to do that in someone else's presence.
Yeah. Oh, it totally is. I mean, again, you know, you have to allow yourself to be really vulnerable and open and comfortable with that person. Some people don't have trouble with that at all, right? It's something that just comes normally. They can do it. And others, it's like, it takes time. Like I have to, and also, you know, depending on how you are, like some people really need that intimate connection and to feel comfortable with someone in order to let go. Some people don't need that. You know, it just all depends.
Right. So how could a woman start to, I mean, what do you usually advise about how to start to be comfortable to do that with a partner? Or, sure. You know, and part of it's going to be the same thing, figuring out what you like and being able to communicate that to a partner so they can be effective, you know, stimulating.
Well, some of that is going to be also understanding, like, does this happen with all partners? Does this happen? You know, and if you, you know, let's say it's just with, you know, with the current partner, what is it that is getting in the way? You know, oh, well, I'm, you know, I don't like the way I look anymore, or I'm scared he or she is going to judge me, or I look really silly when I do that, or it takes me too long, or, you know, what I like is different and maybe they won't be comfortable with it. So becoming really comfortable with yourself, with your preferences, with your partner, with communicating, right? Have fun experimenting. I think that's one of the most fun things about sexual activity is just playing around together and trying different things. And I really think, you know, once you're able to kind of do that a little bit, you might be more comfortable communicating what you want and need.
Mm-hmm. It certainly means you need to be comfortable with your partner telling them that you even struggle to have an orgasm with them. I mean, you know, first of all, I guess if somebody's been faking, if you're one of the 67% right? of heterosexual women that have, I think that's what you said, have done that.
I've reported faking at one point. It doesn't mean they fake every time.
Right. But I mean, you know, if, yeah, let me just ask you this. What if somebody's been faking with a partner because they can orgasm alone? They haven't been able to do it with this partner. So they decided at some point faking was better. And now they're realizing,
I really want to have an orgasm.
Well, yeah, and I don't want this sort of lie between us, you know, or this barrier. So
there's one thing. So yes, there's that thought process of like, okay, I need to tell this person I've been faking it. You don't really need to tell them you've been faking it. If you want to, okay, I'd have a longer conversation about why, you know, who's that to help? Is it really for you? Is it for your partner? And the better conversation is like, how can I make it so that I can experience this pleasure now? So maybe I haven't in the past, but I want to now. Things have changed. Can I feel comfortable talking to them about what it is I need now? You know, so I'd love if we could, you know, not go straight to stimulation of the genitals and we could just like spend some time exploring each other's bodies. And I want to get into it more and I want to try new things. And, you know, I read about this and I think it'd be really enjoyable. I heard this great podcast and they recommended that we do this. So, you know, the Better Sex Podcast, we want to have better sex. So let's do it. Let's try these things.
All right. And then any other tips for, I mean, I'm trying to, in my own practice in general, the partners are supportive, like they want to do whatever it would take and are willing to explore. And, you know, I think it's the people that have struggled to have orgasm maybe have a harder time going into that space and approaching it like playful and exploratory and, absolutely. You know, it's been loaded for them.
Yeah, I think it depends on the person, right? Absolutely. That is a scary place to go. It's like, okay, now I want to put my pleasure first. But there are some partners that won't take so well to it. Like there are some partners that their sexual script and what they need are just, you know, whether, you know, in a heterosexual relationship, there might be some males that are just like, that's all I want. And then we're done. right? That, you know, there are some partners that might not be comfortable themselves with this exploration. So if they're not comfortable with prolonged sexual experiences, then, and that's what you need and want to connect and to feel more intimate and to get experience more pleasure and arousal. And you might not get that from every partner. So it really does depend. It can be both or all three or four or five.
All right. And what about in acquired, I'm trying to think the kinds of things that happen that mean orgasm is difficult now and it didn't used to be. So I'm thinking, you know, not partner specific, but like.
Let's talk about what changed, right? We need to understand what changed and when. Did that come on quickly or was it gradually over time where it started becoming less intense, started becoming more difficult again? So we can tease out all of those factors, you know, and try to understand like, why now? Why is this happening if it didn't used to happen? What is different? For some, it might be after I had my second child, right? Just all of a sudden for some, and that could, you know, immediately a lot of people's minds would go to, oh, the physical, there was some trauma, something in their body. No, it could have been a change in their, how they feel about their body. It could be a change in how tired they were because they now have a second child. It could be change in their relationship with their partner. Maybe their partner is doing too much, doing too little, not doing things the way they want them to. And all of a sudden they're just turned off by or not into. So, you know, again, playing detective and trying to understand what is different now and why am I feeling like this in this moment and I didn't used to.
Yeah.
What do I need to work on to maybe try to get past that?
What if it's a real physical issue? And I'm thinking about menopause. I'm thinking about cancer. You know, I'm thinking about some things related to aging. Like sometimes things are happening that we're not going to be able to just address by thinking about them. What do you encourage women to do in those kinds of cases where orgasm, you know, the threshold, you know, maybe is out of reach, but certainly it's more difficult.
And for some, it might. And this is when we want, I think, as early as possible, before we get to this point, I encourage everybody to make sure that their sexual repertoire is expanded as such that it doesn't have to look a certain way to get you excited and to feel good, right? Again, why are we focused just on this big orgasm thing, you know? And for many, those things might make it more likely, right, at different times. I mean, for something like, you know, if there is something physiological going on, it might actually be harder to have an orgasm. And so what else can we do that feels good? Let's stay away from focusing on just that. And for some, things like menopause actually make it more likely that somebody's going to enjoy sexual activity. As we age, especially females, we oftentimes feel more secure in our sexuality, feel more secure asking for what we want, are more comfortable with our bodies. And certainly during menopause, there's that big thing off the plate is like, I don't have to worry about getting pregnant.
You know? Right.
And that certainly makes it more enjoyable for many of us.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think we need to think about it as it might change, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to change for the worse.
Right.
So how can we make this, how can we accept different and still enjoy it?
Yeah. Which also is about, you know, yes, we want to do the things we can about having an opportunity to have an orgasm, but if we really can't or can't sometimes, it's not the whole point of sex. Right? Like it's not the only reason to do it. It's not the payoff.
And start focusing on that now. Just enjoy being, you know, arousal and being close to a partner or not close to a partner or the excitement of a new partner or, you know, just start expanding and enjoying different things. And some of that will stick.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it brings to mind too, that we have to, we're sort of constantly reinventing ourselves. You know, we got to start over in the course of a relationship or over our lifetime, right? We're going to have to reinvent this, revisit this, get creative again. It's not like we figure this out once and that's what serves us for the rest of our sexual life.
Yes, exactly.
So that willingness to be a newbie or reevaluate things seems so important. Anything else I forgot to ask you or that you want to make a point to say?
Yeah, no, I think you asked some great questions and I really hope this is helpful to people in terms of understanding themselves and things that they can try and ways that they are thinking about their sexuality and, you know, any struggles that they're having. So I really hope that this is helpful and that you got what you wanted from it too.
I hope so too. I know I got what I wanted. Hopefully the listeners will as well. Will you tell people where they can find you online? Anything you want to share with the audience?
Absolutely. Thank you. Again, I'm Dr. Rachel Needle. I have a number of websites, drrachel.com. My practice, I run a large group practice, is Whole Health Psychological Center. You can find it at wholehealthpsych.com. I also do continuing education and trainings. I train medical and mental health professionals around the world. We do certifications like sex therapy certification, couples and sex therapy, LGBTQIA affirmative therapy certification, alternative relationships, transgender mental health care certifications. And we also are a licensed school and offer a PhD in clinical sexology. So that is through my Modern Sex Therapy Institutes. So you can go to modernsextherapyinstitutes.com if you want to learn more about that. Feel free to contact me anytime at drrachelneedle@gmail.com. I would love to answer any questions. So thank you for having me.
You are a busy woman. Something tells me. Go, go, go. Well, thank you so much.
You've been listening to Better Sex. Please visit our website, bettersexpodcast.com, for show notes and additional episodes.
And that's a wrap for today. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you are enjoying the podcast, if some of this material resonates with you and you would like to make a difference and make sure that this keeps coming out in the world once a week, ongoing, there are a couple things you could do to show your appreciation. The first would be to go to iTunes and rate and review the show. That really helps us be found by new listeners when you review the show on iTunes. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/iTunes. The other thing I want to invite you to consider is becoming a Patreon. For a small monthly pledge, you get some benefits. So for $2 a month, you get advance access to every single episode. For $5 a month, you get a chapter of my upcoming new book. And for $10 a month, I host quarterly get-to-know-you and question-and-answer chats over the web, and you get invited to that. I would love to have your membership in that. Become part of the Better Sex family. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/Patreon, which is P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Again, thanks for listening. I'm glad you're here. Feel free to comment, ask questions, get in touch. I'd love to hear from listeners. Thanks.